Back in November, I preached the first sermon about radical hospitality, which invited us to consider and practice radical hospitality as revolutionary welcome, beyond just being polite, and a form of disruption in a world where the marginalized and oppressed among us have the door shut on them all too often. This sermon is part two, a continued exploration of how we can manifest radical hospitality more deeply in our own lives and in the lives of this fellowship. So I wonder how you've all done with some of the suggestions that I made back in November. I know I have seen many of you showing up in the community to witness to your commitment to radical hospitality on a variety of issues. I was especially moved by those of you who stuck it out in the rain for that refugee vigil in December. That was quite a commitment. Now that the legislative season is beginning, tomorrow, in fact, many, many more opportunities for witness and advocacy are popping up, from welcoming refugees to add the words to interrupting Islamophobia. And we will do our best to publicize all the opportunities as we hear about them. And I hope you will continue to show up for radical hospitality on behalf of this great community and Unitarian Universalism. And then there were some simpler suggestions that I proposed regarding radical hospitality right here on Sunday mornings. I wonder if any of you were bold enough and invited someone to lunch or coffee, someone you didn't know. I know that Rick and Becky Groff did so and felt so strongly about the experience and about their own experience as newcomers way back when, that they have volunteered to host a monthly coffee for newcomers after the first service, starting January 31st. Offsite, we'll figure out the location as soon as we have that confirmed, and we'll let you know. And I would love to see more volunteers who might be willing to do that, especially after the second service or on other Sundays, a chance to say, hey, it's hard to really connect here in that line for coffee. Let's go out and grab something together. I'd love to get to know you better. It's exciting that these opportunities are popping up and that all of you are seeing the value in doing that. I believe there are two grand theological concepts at the core of radical hospitality. The first lies in our roots of universalism. Early universalists believed in universal salvation, that if humanity was considered to be created in the image of the divine, and if that divine source was good, then no one could be condemned for eternity. All were saved. Our contemporary interpretation of universalism leans more toward the concept of universal love, that all are deemed worthy of love and dignity. You can hear the echoes of our first principle in that sentiment. The invisible thread in all of this is the sense that reconciliation is always possible. And we need to remember that, because we human beings are a fallible bunch. The second theological core of radical hospitality is that of covenant. Those sacred promises that we make to one another about how we will be in relationship with one another. This is also found in our early congregational history, not to mention the Hebrew Scriptures. Covenants back then for the Congregationalists, however, were a form of self-government. And churches used to outline their expectations of membership and authority and participation and ministry as independent and ecclesiastically sovereign bodies, having no hierarchy setting the rules. So while Unitarian Universalism has changed and grown theologically over the years, the most consistent ideology we've adhered to is that of covenant. We pride ourselves on being a creedless faith, dismissing any test of belief and emphasizing relationship, mutuality, and becoming our best selves. Deeds, not creeds, that's what we like to say. Actions over beliefs. Even the language of our seven principles begins with the words, we covenant to affirm and promote. Notice that active language there, affirm and promote, rather than believe. Our principles are those guiding values about how we will be with one another and how we will be out in the world, not fixed beliefs. As our reading so beautifully captured, a covenant invites relationship. It seeks harmony and a shared voice. It gives authority to shared intention. And a covenant is a dance of co-creation, keeping in step with one another in the flow of our lives. I love that imagery of a dance of co-creation. It acknowledges the special contributions that each of us has to offer, the give and take, the leading and following, and the flow that comes when we commit ourselves to beloved community. And so we honor those deep historical roots of covenant and universalism each time we create a covenant together. And we do this often in the life of the church. We ask our small groups and our chalice circles to create a covenant. Our board of directors has created a beautiful covenant this year. And at the start of each church year, our children and youth create their own covenants in their religious exploration classes. Creating a covenant in any context models our commitment to that self-governance, being about mutual agreement and commitment, and reminds us that we all have a voice in our church experience, that we are co-creators of our collective experience, and that we affirm the values of right relationship, trust, and love. We are connected by love, that same universal love affirmed by our forebears. So I want to tell you a little story. A long time ago, and kind of far away, there was a little church. And it was a growing church. And they were very excited about what was happening, and they had a lot of passion and ideas, and they loved their mission and message, and they saw all of this possibility for how they might grow. But they were also struggling, because the people in the church just weren't very nice to each other. They fought about how to do things. They fought about leadership. They fought about money. They fought about, some people had big egos and knew the right way to do things, and other people had great ideas. And the wealthier folks in the church weren't all that thrilled to be sharing space with the poorer folks in the church, but their mission and message taught them that everyone should be included, and so they begrudgingly tolerated them. It was not a very hospitable place. Eventually, one of their founders got so fed up with their shenanigans that he wrote them a letter and kind of basically told them to knock it off and love one another. Here's what the letter said. If I speak in the tongues of mortals and angels, but do not have love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give away all my possessions and if I hand over my body so that I may boast, but I do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. And now faith, hope, and love abide. These three, and the greatest of these, is love. I suspect you've heard those words before. They're a favorite reading at weddings. They're from the Christian scriptures, the book of 1 Corinthians, chapter 13, verses 1 through 7, and verse 13. But they were not written for couples on their wedding day. They were written by the Apostle Paul for the church in Corinth as a stern reprimand to remember the core teachings of their faith above all else. Love one another as you wish to be loved. Your passion and energy, he said, will not make a difference if you cannot be in right relationship with one another. Because for Paul and the early church, that is what being Christ-like was all about. And this concept of right relationship with love at its core is central to our covenantal faith as well. Right relationship is about being in alignment with our covenant and with one another. So, for example, if we say we covenant to freely explore our values and honor theological diversity as a source of common strength, and then we encounter the experience of shaming someone's prayer practice with the erroneous assumption that Unitarian Universalists don't pray, we would be out of right relationship. Or perhaps if our covenant says we will communicate with kindness and support, and we encounter communication that feels at odds with that, we are out of covenant and out of right relationship. Many churches in our association have gone through a process to create a covenant of right relations for the whole congregational body, a formal document that expresses their commitments about how they will be together, how they will treat one another, and what is important to them. This fellowship does not yet have one, and that may be important work for us to consider over the next couple of years. Because right relationship is foundational to a practice of authentic, radical hospitality within our community and the outside world. The two go hand in hand. But what happens when we fall out of covenant? When we miss the mark? When we stumble and when we fail? What happens when human fallibility comes into play and we notice ourselves judging, becoming resentful, or hurting one another? Kind of like that church in Corinth. Or harder still, what happens when we don't notice? Very often our unconscious choices and behaviors can end up hurting people or just driving them away, and we're not even aware. Because this will happen. We will step on each other once in a while, and we will say dumb things. I already have. And conflict and tension will arise and bubble up, but that is the natural cycle of systems and organizations and people. It's not something to be afraid of, but it is something to notice. It's what we do in those moments that matters. Covenants, by their nature, are aspirational. They speak of our highest aspirations about who we are and who we hope to become. And when we fall out of covenant and out of right relationship, we have an equal responsibility to lovingly call each other back into right relationship. When we openly acknowledge that differences and conflict will naturally arise, and we make a commitment to healthy management and resolution, as opposed to just avoiding them and hoping that they'll go away, That keeps us in right relationship and keeps the congregation healthy. So let me ask you, how many of you actually enjoy conflict management? Gwen, good. I'm glad there's at least one of us in this room. Yeah, so not many of us do, right? We'd rather avoid it and hope it goes away. It does not feel good to be in conflict. It certainly doesn't feel good when somebody points out something you've done that has hurt them. But doing so, avoiding it, running away, could potentially lead to festering resentment and deeper tears in the fabric of community. So what if we reframed conflict management into a practice of reconciliation? Remember, the flip side of that universalist theology is that reconciliation is always possible. When we engage in reconciliation, we invite a change that can transform a relationship. A practice of reconciliation. Notice it's called a practice. It's a competency that takes some commitment and some work to develop. The practice of reconciliation holds right relationship at its core. That we hold one another in high esteem and are accountable for communication and new behavior. Reconciliation asks for a commitment to be in conversation, to listen deeply with goodwill, and to focus on learning and growth over the issue at hand. And we even claim this recently in our new member ceremony. During that affirmation we read together, this congregation spoke these words: we will not always live up to our ideals. And when we fall short, we invite you to stay in relationship with us and help us more fully bring alive the spirit of love. That's a beautiful statement of right relationship, full of the possibility of reconciliation. Yes, it is risky. Yes, it is hard. No one likes to hear that they have hurt someone or have done something that has caused conflict. We can never be certain how others will react. And so it requires on our part to own our own part of the breakdown in the relationship or the event. And I imagine this can extend very deeply into our individual lives and our family lives and our work lives. There are likely always people in our lives with whom we could begin a practice of reconciliation. And we do it because we want to commit to an authentic embodiment of radical hospitality that will permeate our life, our individual lives, and the beautiful tapestry of this community, and our commitment to healing and transformation in the world. We make a commitment to love one another, to be in right relationship with one another, with an understanding that reconciliation is always possible. May it be so. Amen. Let us take a moment to be in silent reflection with one another.